If I was trying to think of what would help, what helps me in my yoga is, you know, I started learning Western yoga from Jiva Mukti, right? So David Life and Sharon Gannon and Ruth Lauer were my first teachers of yoga as it's taught in the West. And David and Sharon, they're all three of them were very insistent on watching the breath. So I thought I would talk about that. And then David, when we did our first three retreat, then we wrote them a letter. David and Sharon said, would you come and teach us during the retreat? So during a three-year retreat, you have, I don't know what, every 6 months, we allowed people to have an outside teacher come and teach them. And then the outside teacher could talk, but we couldn't talk. And then, so we wrote them a letter. We didn't know them that well. We took some classes from them before. And then something happened. I don't know, they get hundreds of invitations, you know, to go places. And they said something weird happened, like the letter fell out of a pile of letters and ended up on David's lap or something. And, you know, and then he opened it, and then he said, oh, we can never do this. And then they figured out that they had been invited to Phoenix the week before, and it was perfect. So then they came, and they taught us, and they were really hard. They taught us for, I don't know, 6-7 hours a day yoga and in the yurt. So it was either 120 or it was 20. And it was really cool. It was really beautiful. They came a couple of times. Sharon came by herself one time, and she looked very nervous the whole time. She looked really, really nervous. And then after the retreat, we found out that was a few days after 9/11. And she couldn't call her husband, you know, and the towers were all down. And she's very afraid of flying. But she flew like 2 days after 9/11, and she came. And it was really weird. So anyway, we didn't know what was going on. But they're very insistent on the breath. And I remember they would make you do weird stuff. You know, like this thing where you clasp your hands and you know this thing? So she would take your two fists and force them down on the floor. You know? And like that. And it was crazy. And then you would be going, and then David would get in your face and say, your breathing's off, Geshe Michael, your breathing's off. And you're like, and then he would get right in your face and he'd be like, your breathing's off. You know? And so what I wanted to talk about was your breathing, right? So a lot of you are already pretty comfortable with the poses of Niguma Yoga. So the first thing is just to get the poses straight, right? And personally, again, I would use a DVD. I would do it with the DVD. There's a Niguma DVD somewhere. If you don't have money, just copy it. I don't care. You know, I sit out in China, and then suddenly there were 100,000. But anyway. you know, once you get the basic movements down, when you first start yoga, you feel klutzy and you feel stupid because the guy says, put your left foot forward and you put your right foot forward. And every time you start a new series, you feel, what do you call it? Irritated at the teacher. Like somehow it's their fault that you don't know which foot to put forward. So there's a learning curve, right? And it's more difficult for a beginner, okay? The hardest yoga classes are your first 100 or something, okay? And then it gets easier, all right? But so it takes more courage to do yoga when you're a beginner than it does much later, right? It takes more fortitude to be a beginner in yoga than later. So get through your first 100 yoga sessions, you know? So you're just struggling because you're not used to being in your body, right? Most of us are not used to being in our body. And I'd certainly haven't been in most of my life. I wasn't in my body. You know, I was in my head. And so first it was in the monastery, and then later it was in corporation. And in the monastery, you're just sitting and reading and meditating, and some debating, And then in the corporation, you're just sitting and working, you know. So I was totally, what do you call it, divorced from my body. And some miracle happened in the retreat. It's a long story. But I saw a dance teacher, and I heard their name. And I found them. And then I was dancing the last, I don't know, 4 or 5 years in New York. I would go at night after class and take classes from Zeba Cohen. She runs the dance program at Princeton, but she's a very beautiful teacher. So then we had these secret sessions, and she would teach me. But then I started to get into my body, okay? And so at the beginning, when you start the yoga, you don't feel comfortable, because it's all, everything's uncomfortable, you know? And I remember, I know, okay? Because I was there. And your whole body is like, doesn't do what you want it to do, and okay? And then just get over that. A lot of that is pride, right? A lot of that is pride. Even for someone who's been doing yoga for a long time, you know, they hesitate to go to an advanced class because they don't want to look stupid or like that. I know some teachers told me, I don't want my students to see that I can't do certain poses because it's bad for them. But I don't think so. I think it's more, what do you call it? It gives more faith in the student if they see you're trying and you can't do everything. I think it develops more faith in the student. I know Dharma Mitra, you go to his class and he'll conduct the class, and then he'll try to do some really exotic poses during the class, and he's always falling down and banging his knees and, you know, and hitting his nose, and he's like a child. It's like watching a child learn to walk, and it makes you have more faith in him. Because he's willing to fall down in front of the students, and that's why he can do a headstand without his arms, okay? Which he does. He just does a headstand like that, and because he was goofing around and he wasn't afraid to look dumb, you know, and now he looks not dumb. So anyway, at the beginning it's hard to get your body. Once the basic motions are okay. And once you're sort of in your body, then what I'd like you to try this week is to be more aware of your breath, okay? So that's like step two. Step one is you just get the foot in the right place and the arms in the right place, and we'll talk about that from time to time. But what I'd like you to concentrate on this week, what I'd like you to learn is to watch your breath, okay? So obviously your breath, unless you've got a cold or you're totally out of breath, the breath should be coming into your nose. Okay, that's principle number one. Okay, so if you can, whenever you can, try to breathe in through your nose, all right? David Swenson also came to the three-year retreat, and we didn't even know him. And we sent him this, and he's very busy. He's booked like 3 years ahead. And I don't know, some miracle happened and he came. And he would say, if your breath... You see, your breath comes out, right? Your breath gets off. You start in Tadasana, and you're watching your breath come and go. And I would, ultimately, I suggest that you try to get one breath to three heartbeats, okay? So it's like, you want to try it? Okay, so first, just sit up straight, and then we'll be quiet for a second, and then I'll ask you to hook into your heartbeat, okay? Try to feel your heartbeat. If you're really quiet, it's a sound that sometimes you can hear in your eardrum. If you're not so quiet, at least you can feel the heart beating in your chest. Try to get in touch with the rhythm of your heart. then try to count it as a beat. There's two basic kinds of beats in music, right? 3-4 and 4-4. And 3-4 is sort of a waltz sound, like it's a da 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 da. It's like a 3 count. And then most rock and roll is just 4 beats, you know. And the reason human beings have written music mainly in those two kinds of beats is that that's how your heart beats, okay? And that's how you can hear your heart. So you might hear 3 beats and then 3 more beats. Or you might hear it as 4 beats and 4 more beats. So I'm going to ask you to listen now. Then we're going to have a vote between the 3 beaters and the 4 beaters, okay? Is your heart beating in 3 beats at a time? Or 4 beats at a time. Check. Okay, ready? Here we go. Okay. 3 beaters, raise your hand. 4 beaters, raise your hand. Okay. And it's just your own personal thing, okay? Now what I'd like you to do is try to match your breathing to the beats, okay? So, 3 beaters. See if you can exhale for 3 beats and then inhale for 3 beats. 4 beaters. See if you can exhale for 4 beats. And then inhale for 4 beats, okay? Just see if you can match your inhales and exhales to the beating. 3 out, 3 in, or 4 out, 4 in. Okay, you ready? Go. Got it? Okay. You got it? It's all right? Okay. There's a logic to that because if you see a cadaver, if you see the ribs taken, the skin and the ribs taken off of a corpse, and there's a cool thing you can do. You can blow into the trachea of a dead person after you took their ribs off, and the lungs will inflate. They will move, you know. And they're smaller than you think. And they are not like two big balloons on either side of your chest. It's more like flat triangles that are nestled around your heart. And then the movement of the lungs as you exhale and inhale assists the beating of the heart, you see? Because they're nestled around the heart. And then if your breathing gets off, then it's working against the beating of your heart. You see, it's very interesting. So you have to... In yoga, it helps a lot, the whole process, if you observe the breath carefully with relation to your heartbeat, okay? And that's what I'd like you to try today during this series, okay? As we do the yoga, first of all, try to keep your breath regular, all right? And then secondly, try to keep it according to the heartbeats. As you do a pose which is more strenuous for you, Like, Surya Namaskar, right? Or as you do a pose which is more uncomfortable for you, like a backbend, your heart will beat faster because you need more oxygen, okay? The oxygen is immediate food for the muscles. And when you start to strain, the muscles demand more food, immediate food. You know, on the, what do you call it? At the moment food, which is oxygen. So then as a pose is more challenging for you, the breath will automatically start to speed up, and that's okay. But match it with the heart, you know? And don't start panting through your mouth. Try to keep it through your nose. And try to keep the same number of beats per exhale and inhale. It'll just go faster. The breath will go faster, and the beats will go faster. Because the heart is helping to pump the lungs and to get the oxygen to the muscles. And the muscles are demanding more food. If you want me to stay in this pose, I need more food. Okay? And that's why your breath starts to speed up. But try not to get the breath jagged, okay? Try to keep the breath. If you can, three beats out, three beats in. Or four beats out and four beats in, okay? I was resolved to give you more time today. One last thing, okay? And we'll talk more about it next time we're together. In yoga, the breath is very crucial, okay? Why? And this is what we call the onion skin, all right? So you're in yoga, in ancient yoga texts, they call it the pancha kosha. So there are five koshas. We were talking about Abhidharma kosha, right? So kosha means by the way, it's spelled either sha or sha. So it has two spellings, but it means, it can mean a treasure chest, a chest in which you hold jewels. And that's why they call the Abhidharma kosha the kosha, okay? It can mean a sheath for a sword, all right? And then, so in yoga, in ancient yoga theory, there's the five sheaths, Anamaya kosha, Pranamaya kosha, Jnanamaya kosha, Vijnanamaya kosha, like this, Anandamaya kosha. These are the sheaths of being, the layers of your being. Okay? And they are interconnected. All right? So going from the outside of your body, you could say there's your physical body, right? There's your muscles and skin and flesh, right? And they are supported, they are fed, they are sustained by the next layer down, which is your breath. Okay? So your physical breath going in and out of your body is the next layer down of your being, and it sustains the physical layer. So you have to breathe well in yoga for the muscles to grow well and to be fed well. Okay, so your breathing has to be careful. If the breathing is good, the prana will follow. Okay, so even in many texts in India and Tibet, the words for prana and the words for breath are not separate, and you have to be careful when you translate them, because it's confusing. Breath, prana, right? Pra-ana. Pra means very much, up in front. The word proud came from that. The word prow came from that, of a boat. So pra means, or super, supra, comes from that, up front, okay? And then an means to breathe, okay? And it came to mean spirit. Animus in Latin, animal in English, anime in Japanese. Just kidding. but it means alive, animated, breathing. Okay, so prana. So it can refer to your external breath, but that breath is sustained by your inner prana, the prana running through your channels, right? The channels that we talked about yesterday, which are central channel, Starbucks channel, and traffic channel, okay? Or partner channel, I don't know. Irritation channel. So these are, then prana is running through those. Any disturbance at any of the levels of your being causes a disturbance at the other levels of your being. Okay, so a disturbance in the physical body will disturb the breathing, will disturb the prana. Okay, they're all interrelated. They're all helping each other, right? So if you can work on your prana, if you can help it move smoothly by what? Untwisting, stretching, gathering, distributing, right? The four poses for each chakra. If you can work on the prana, then your breath flow will improve, right? If your breath is not flowing smoothly, it means your prana is not flowing smoothly, right? And that means you have knots. And that makes you mortal, right? So we want to keep the breath regular. 3 beats out, 3 beats in, or 4 beats out and 4 beats in. Keep the breath regular, and that will have an effect on the prana, okay? That will help the prana move more smoothly. What's the next level down in your being, you see? What's making the prana move smoothly from the inside? What's below the prana? And then in Tibet they say lung sem jupachipa. Say lung sem jupachipa. This is like a mantra that you have to learn when you're studying tantra or yoga. Yoga is part of secret teachings in Tibet, right? Physical asanas are secret. So lung sem jupachipa means your prana and your thoughts are linked together, okay? As your prana goes, your thoughts will go. The prana is considered like a horse, and the thoughts are considered like a horse rider. Sometimes the horse tells the rider where to go. I had a horse like that. You know, I'd say, I would pull the reins right and the horse would go left. So sometimes the horse is bigger, right? And they decide where to go. But usually the rider tries to direct the horse. You can use your thoughts to direct your prana, or you can use your prana to direct your thoughts, okay? If you can smooth out your breath, it will smooth out your prana, and that will lessen the amount of prana in the overeating sign and in the get upset at your partner sign, okay? So if you can normalize your breathing as you do your yoga, that will affect your prana, and that will affect your thinking, your thoughts, okay? So it's very beautiful. Then we get into what? Say chinang? Tabla. Sorbet. You can get at your thoughts through your prana, or you can get at your prana through your thoughts, you see? You can go from the outside, move your body in a certain way, twist your body to open a knot, to release the prana, which will release your thoughts, and you will think more smoothly, okay? Or if you're like, if your breathing's out of control, you can force it down with your thoughts. You see, you can go the other way. You can say, we're not gonna breathe that way. We're gonna breathe more slowly. We're gonna breathe more regularly. You can force the breath down to 3 and 3, right? Or 4 and 4, by thinking, okay? With your thoughts. Because the thoughts lie under the prana, lie under the breath, lie under the skin. Okay, or that's from the inside. Or you can go from the outside and say, you know, we're going to breathe more slowly so that we don't feel so, what do you call it? Sometimes in a yoga class you get what? You start to get out of balance and you get, what do you call it? You're like, ah, I can't do this, or like that. You lose your cool, right? You can start getting angry at the teacher. Why are they doing this, you know? It's always a teacher. So use your thoughts to calm your breath down, and use your breath to calm your thoughts down, okay? That's the trick in yoga. So today I want you to work on your breath. I want you to try to feel the three heartbeats out and then 3 heartbeats in. And that will have an effect on your mind, you see? The prana and your mind. Now, last thing, then we'll start. Well, 2 more things. You can't always do it. You know, David Life is in your face and saying, Geshe-la, your breath is out. And you're like, and you're like, you know, I know my breath is out. You asked me to do something I can't do, you know. And then you say, okay, he's the teacher, I'll try to calm down my breath, but you can't, right? And you say, I'll calm down my thoughts, and you can't. You're still upset at him. or you're still upset at the yoga, you know, you're still like, oh, I can't do this, you know. And what determines whether you can control your breath or your thoughts? What lies below the thoughts? It's karma. It's seed. It's very interesting, okay? Whether you can control your mind to improve your breathing, or whether you can change your breathing to control your emotions, is not in your current control. Okay? And you know that. You know, somebody says, don't be angry. Your partner says something stupid, and you're like, I'm not going to get mad. You know, and then you're like, you can't stop. You can't stop yourself. You're listening to those thoughts. You're not having those thoughts. You're the victim of those thoughts. You're the witness, right? You're just listening. Somebody's talking in your head. It's not you. Okay? And then you're just listening. You can't be talking and listening. That's not possible. At the same time, you can't be. Somebody spoke a millisecond before, and you are hearing it a millisecond after. And by the time you hear it, it has already been spoken. That means you're not controlling it. Okay? You're just listening. Okay? So whether you will be able to control your breath in this class, or whether you will be able to maintain your happiness when somebody's asking you to do some pose that's difficult, it's not up to the current control. Because there's no such thing as current control. Okay? Whether you will be able to stay calm in your breath and in your emotions was determined last week. It was decided last week, okay? When you got angry or you didn't get angry about somebody, okay? Interesting? It's very interesting, okay? Those things were already determined from last week, okay? There's a kosha, there's a layer of your being that lies below your breath and below your thoughts, which is what you did last week. Okay? So that's why you've got to be so careful to be kind to people and to be good to people. All right? It'll determine whether you can breathe smoothly today in the class. All right? And that also means don't get all upset if you can't, because it's not your fault. It's Bob's fault. Okay? Who's Bob? Do you know Bob? So I had a really good student in Australia named Salim Lee, right? And I was praising him one day in the car. I was saying, you're such a good guy, you know, you're always calm, you're so intelligent, you're so sweet. He said, Geshe-la, that's not me, that's Bob. And I'm like, who's Bob? You know, I fell for it, you know. I'm like, who's Bob? You know, he said, Geshe-la, that was my last life. You know, Bob was my last life. He did all these good things, and now I'm intelligent in this life. It's Bob's fault, you know. So whether you can breathe well or not today, whether you can control your breath, actually it's coming from Bob, meaning Farah last week, right? All right? Farah or Farah?
Farah.
Farah. It's up to what you did last week. So that means if you want your yoga to be good, you have to be nice to other people, especially in the class, okay? So that's common in a class to feel, what do you call, type A people, meaning me, they're like, oh, this person's handstand is bad, you know. I can't do a handstand. They're doing a handstand, you know. I hope they fall down, you know, something like that, you know. So it's important during the class, if you want your breath to be smooth and you want your emotions to be happy, you have to have good wishes for the other people in the class, okay? That's the lowest level of your being. That's the most inner level of your being. Everything else is flowing from that. How good are your wishes for the other people in the class? How much do you wish for their success in the class? Normally, yoga is a very, what do you call it? David calls it, David Life calls it, what do you call it when you're just trying to get something for yourself? It's like decadent, but it's not decadent. He likes to say almost hedonistic, yeah. It's a pleasure thing. Most people in a yoga class are focusing on themselves. How do I feel? How's my pose? And they're not really much thinking about the other people in the class, unless the other people in the class are noticeably better than them, you know, or something like that. You see what I mean? So try in this class today to have good wishes for the other people. Like, I hope you do this pose all right. Or, you know, be aware of the other people. You have to be aware of your breath and of your pose and of your movement and of your alignment. But also reserve a little piece of your mind to wish the other people in the class well. You know, I hope everyone in this class has a good time. I hope everyone becomes more healthy. And I hope your breath is okay. And like that, send little, you can't do it the whole class, it's not possible, because you're thinking about left foot or right foot, and necessarily. But then sometimes during the class, I guess do the whole, they say Semkeki Simba, right? Say Semkeki Simba. It means, Semke is bodhicitta, right? In Tibetan, Semke means bodhicitta. Simba means imbued with, or under the influence of, D-O-I? D-U-I? Yeah, D-U-I. Maybe it's Y-U-I, yoga under the influence. Y-U-I. That's good, I like that. Y-U-I. Yoga under the influence means, you're under the influence of bodhicitta means you can't always be, have a manifest awareness of kindness towards other, because you're worrying about, do I have my left foot forward or my right foot forward? So at that moment, when you're trying to decide what's your left foot and what's your right foot, you can't think about, I hope, you know, Scott has a good class, you know? But sometimes between poses, or between, when you're in a pose and they're holding it, then just try to think of the other people in the class and send them good wishes. That's all. Nothing fancy. Okay? Just send them good wishes once in a while. Try to get a good feeling in the class. That will change your karma. That will change your thoughts. That will change your prana. That will change your breathing. That will change your body. Got it? And that's the kosha theory. Those are the koshas. It's cool, right? It's very cool. If you want to be a good yogi, wish others well in the class. Everything else flows from that. It's very cool. One more kosha, okay? Not doing very well. One more kosha. There's one more layer outside of your physical skin, which is? It's the whole world. It's the room. It's the camp. It's the forest. It's the sky. It's the country you live in. It's the planet you stand upon. It's the galaxy in which that planet is located, right? Those are determined by the condition of the other koshas. The condition of the outer world is determined by the condition of the other koshas. Okay? The kindness, the feeling of fraternity, right? Fraternite, the brotherhood, sisterhood in the class affects your thoughts next week, which affect your prana, which affect your breathing, which affect the condition of your skin and muscles and bones, which affects the condition of your country and the weather and the smoothness of the highways under the car, and what kind of people you're going to meet, and the stars. Okay, it's very beautiful. Okay, so your yoga is affecting everything outside of you also, because that's just the next layer. Okay, so make it sweet, okay? Watch your breath, and once in a while, think kind thoughts to the person next to you as they kick you. Okay, all right, let's go.